On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this 17th day of January 2013 edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and of course, headonradionetwork.com is our home. You can always get the stream quite easily simply by going there, but if you've got a mobile device, you can use a number of smartphone apps to get the program as well, things like TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio apps, as well as the Tuner Internet Radio app, all of which are available for both Android and iPhone devices. This is, of course, Thursday. We are live from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign in Washington, D.C., up on Capitol Hill, and headed for home tomorrow. So hopefully things will work out nicely with the weather. I had a brief chat with Agnes before the program began, however, and she tells me that things are kind of nasty there back in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia. So it may be an interesting drive. My plan is to get out of here early enough to be behind the microphone tomorrow night, but if the weather is uncooperative, that may not play out exactly as we might otherwise have hoped. But I will try to be for us to be live for Friday on the front porch from the home studio tomorrow evening. Another program announcement, also having to do with heading back to almost level West by God, Virginia. We have another in the continuing series of PRISM West Virginia American History chats tomorrow with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Professor Keith Lilly, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. This new semester is well underway, and it has to do, this semester's class is on the history of American foreign policy. So I think you'll find that quite interesting. Then we turn around and we come back to D.C. on Tuesday for more work with the AIC campaign. You know, you can be part of the AIC campaign yourself. You can go to AIC Act. ACHEACT.org, and you can even use the little widget we have there on the Take Action tab of the website. The website, of course, designed and built by our own John Fox, with many thanks to him. You can use the Take Action link to look up your member of Congress and get a phone number and an email address or a contact form right there without ever having to leave the website. So you can access things like the bill that was introduced, H.R. 5959, in the last Congress. And you can read and examine the science for yourself and see the horrific effects of mountaintop removal in our Central Appalachian communities. So take action, won't you? The bill will be reintroduced in the House of Representatives in the next couple of weeks. We'll probably be here for that. And we are, as mentioned last night, working on finding someone in the Senate to introduce the AIC Act there so that work can begin on the other side of the Congress as well. A note in from Robert, our buddy in Australia, Phase 5 when he's in the chat room. He says, here in Sydney today, we're expecting 100 degrees Fahrenheit on the coast and 110 degrees Fahrenheit in the west. Robert says, I think I'll be standing under the shower listening. Oy. You know, extreme weather. I get it, it's probably sunspots or microwaves or some sort of improper transmissions through the fillings in our teeth or something. It couldn't have anything to do with an ongoing global climate catastrophe now, could it? Yes, as a matter of fact, it probably could. It is the 17th of January, and with things being the way they are, for tomorrow being a travel day, and not sure if we'll be back to the studio or not in time, Robert wanted me to let folks know that his 20th day of the month contribution to the Horn is on the way. He's got a $75 challenge out there, $75 that he is willing to match for 75 that come in. So, you know, that's 10 at 750. Oh, don't make me do the math. But if we can pull together $75 in contributions, Robert will make up the other $75, and that will take care of tonight's fundraising. So thank you very kindly to our good friend Robert in Australia and to all of you for helping to keep all of this going. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. You will also find there the Contribute tab, where you can get the snail mail address if you prefer to contribute via snail mail. But do please remember, if you send a check or a money order or something like that, please don't make it payable to Bob Kincaid, because Bob Kincaid does not get the money. Our creditors and providers get the money, so checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications or Head On Radio Network, something along those lines. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there are plenty of thorns in sides out there. What is, we use the Metro quite a bit while we're here in D.C., and it's more than a little interesting to see the way that people who live and work in D.C. get messaged at. In this particular case, they're being messaged in the Metro by some outfit, and you know by the name itself, you know that this is a bunch of fraud artists, I'm guessing. There are messages all over the Metro in D.C. right now from an organization called Bankrupting America. Now, of course, we print our own currency here in this country, so we can't really go bankrupt. But just listen to the Orwellian language of their about page. What is Bankrupting America? Bankrupting America is an educational project that explores the policies hindering economic opportunity and growth in America. They say their goal is not merely to place blame or point fingers. They want to find solutions to economic problems that concern all Americans. Well, okay, so far. They're unconcerned with political party lines. That usually means that they're ashamed to admit they're Republicans. Anybody know about these people? Gretchen Hamel? Linwood Brooks? Michael O'Shea? I'm a little leery of people who talk about bankrupting America as if this nation could go into bankruptcy court. Deficit Reduction Plan Resource Center. Yeah, this is interesting to say the least, because there are banners all over the metro. This isn't—I don't know if these people are as odious as "Fix the Debt," but they do seem fairly odious. And I mean, their banners are, and they've got their little hashtag, and they want. Well, whenever you see, you're seeing it out there. You know what's being said. Every time they start talking about the deficit, for God's sakes, they wind up engaging in some of that they verge toward wanting to engage in some of that zombie-eyed granny starving that's so popular with the right wing. And, of course, on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, we have a story from the zombie-eyed granny starver himself, Paul Ryan. Yeah. But as far as Thorn in the Side Thursdays go, it takes all kinds. I got a tweet from Sandra earlier today. Sandra said, shallow alert. Please cover this hilarious, sardonically sick, fake dead girlfriend story out of South Bend, Indiana. Did you hear about this thing? This is weird. I mean, bizarre weird. Before Notre Dame got its much-deserved comeuppance in the national championship game, and this is not a football story, this is a human events kind of story. One of the most talked about members of the Notre Dame football squad is a young man named Manti Te'o. Even considered in the Heisman chase, even though he's a defensive player. Did you run across this story? Because Sandra's right, this is bizarre. There's a very good sports blog out there by the name of Deadspin, and they put an investigative report up yesterday looking into the story that was publicized of the tragic death of Manti Te'o's girlfriend. It's bizarre. There was no girlfriend. There was no death. The story from Time says, not long before Notre Dame played Michigan State last fall, word spread that Fighting Irish linebacker Manti Te'o had lost his grandmother and girlfriend within hours of each other. Te'o never missed a practice and made season-high 12 tackles, 2 pass breakups, and a fumble recovery in a 20-3 victory against Michigan State. His inspired play became a stirring storyline for the Fighting Irish as they made a run to the national championship, yada, yada, yada. Notre Dame, however, last night said that Manti Te'o was duped in an online relationship with a woman whose death from leukemia was faked by perpetrators of an elaborate hoax. What? Manti Te'o only came clean about this stuff 3 weeks ago. But the thing is, they're also saying that Manti Te'o may have been in on the gag. the con, the fraud. It's just weird. And it's kind of a reminder. And for me, it sort of spells the difference between real relationships that happen in cyberspace. And I'm not talking about ChristianMingle.com either. Why does God need a dating website? You know, he's God. Right? Yeah. But, you know, we Marty says, bizarre. Hell, it'd be too far out even for Twin Peaks. Indeed. No, we talk to each other in this little online community. You hear from people. We share our emails. And it's pretty much a certainty that we're all real. On the other hand, this Notre Dame football player who was lionized by the for-profit sports media thought he was in love with a person who was dying of leukemia who wasn't real in the first place. Huh. Sort that out. Because I can't. Let's see. Well, actually, Marty, we don't need to let Agnes know this. I'm glad you let me know this. We're not seeing any strange behavior on the stream here, except for my own strange behavior. Marty says he's got some buffering. Nothing really to report here. Apparently, Dave Zirin has opined on the Manti Te'o story. Yeah, Marty, do send me that link. I would appreciate it if you would. About the best sports writer in this country on a consistent basis. The best sports writer in this country is Dave Zirin, if you like to keep up with that sort of thing, because he's very good at noting the social realities of sport and how it crosses lines from sport into our general body politic. Multitasking here, getting a couple of things done. There we go. So just a couple of things from the from the stack for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Wow. Okay. I'm anxious now to read the Zirin story. And Zirin starts out noting that 2 years ago he called the Notre Dame football program a moral cesspool, and has continued to highlight the fact that women are ill-treated in the certain members of the football program. He writes, Manti Te'o was a campus icon, the runner-up Heisman Trophy winner, and the acknowledged inspirational leader of a team that came within one game of the national championship. He also, as Deadspin reported in a brilliant piece of investigative journalism, shared, knowingly or unknowingly, an elaborate lie with major media outlets about a girlfriend, Stanford student Lene Kikua, who didn't exist. In the last 6 months, as Te'o's fame ballooned, America learned about the football star's soulmate, who suffered a terrible car accident and, while hospitalized, discovered that she had leukemia. Whoa. Lene, according to Teo, would stay on the phone with him for 8 hours while he slept because hearing him breathe would ease her suffering. In September, she passed away. This tragic relationship was covered in Sports Illustrated, ESPN, even the New York Times fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. Teo did interviews where he choked back tears. He spoke of their time together as well as of her parents. People raised thousands of dollars in her name for cancer research. But she didn't exist. Interestingly, when this broke, Manti Te'o was at NFL combines doing performance testing for the draft. One of the things they teach you at the combines is how to handle the media. It looks like Manti Te'o may be ahead of that curve. Agnes just messaged me. She said, it sounds like someone had watched A Walk to Remember. You know, it's one of those movies. Notre Dame wound up hiring a private investigation firm to sort out all of this. Writing about Notre Dame, Dave Zirin says that Notre Dame is not just about football players without a compass. It's the adults without a conscience. Their credo isn't any kind of desire for truth or justice. Instead, it seems to be little more than a constant effort to protect the Fighting Irish brand, no matter who gets hurt. Thanks, Robert. He says, no buffering and loud and clear in Australia. Okay. Apparently, I'm finding out that people are having a hard time hearing on the telephone connections. Juanita, no worries. Apparently, I'm able to hear y'all, but y'all aren't so easily able to hear me, so I apologize for that. We really will get that sorted in the coming weeks. As soon as I get home, I'll get that lovely piece of equipment that will make FireWire connectivity from this computer to the mix desk work again. This is entirely improvised right now, and it will be much easier. No, Juanita, you did not sound like you were ranting. and I don't think you were the only one that was having a hard time hearing my end of the conversation. I think Dave did too. I think that was a general problem because more than one person said, "You there, Bob?" "You know, I'm here." So we will open the lines for conversation this evening, this Thorn in the Side Thursday, but not until we get a couple more stories into the hopper, because there is too much crazy to let go by. I mentioned the zombie-eyed granny starver, Paul Ryan. God bless Charlie Pierce for coming up with that name. That's just perfect. The man who couldn't carry his own state or his own town for Willard Romney on the ticket. Guess what he did? You know how we went through the entire presidential campaign process and they tried to pretend that they were all moderate and stuff, these repig-lickins. Oh, no, we don't hate the women's. Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Raw Story reporting that Ryan has just signed on a brand new bill. Representative Paul Ryan, erstwhile vice presidential candidate in the failed presidential run of former Governor Willard Mitt Romney, has signed on as a co-sponsor in a draconian new bill aimed at curtailing women's, here we go again, reproductive freedoms. Or we could write it a different way, aimed at controlling women's internal organs. Ryan and his colleagues are forging ahead with a new measure that classifies all embryonic tissue as a human life from the moment of fertilization, you know, whenever that occurs, right? Boy. And he's not just running a, he's not running, no, well, Paul Ryan, you know, he's supposed to be the brains of the Republican Party, but he's gone, he's decided to get in bed, well, figuratively, I suppose, he's decided to get in bed with one of the loopiest of the loopy in his caucus, one Representative Paul Brown of Georgia. You may recall we've talked about Paul Brown. Paul Brown is the guy who says that all science comes from the pits of hell. This is, of course, also Dr. Representative Paul Brown, M.D., who says that science comes from the pits of, you know, hell. And they're going to declare that all fertilized tissue, it's not even, well, it's all, it's a person. Had to be out in town earlier today and ran across some campaigners with their clipboards on the sidewalks working to raise money for Planned Parenthood. I thought, you know, hooray for them. They're out there. They're meeting, you know, real individual people. They're not sitting there snacking on fetuses or anything that that crazy bastard, Rick Perry, got a Rick Perry story courtesy of Dr. John here in a little bit. Mercy. Yeah, Agnes asking, oh, okay, we've got a fetal personhood bill? Lovely. Where's the neonatal to 18 years old care bill? When will it be introduced? Well, honey, Paul Ryan is a zombie-eyed granny starver, and that means he's also a zombie-eyed baby starver and a zombie-eyed 18-year-old starver. If you're not a fetus inside a female, he ain't interested. And Paul Brown just thinks it's all lies from the pits of hell anyway. Welcome to the 2013 version edition of the House of Representatives, where they had to struggle to get a relief bill for victims of Hurricane Sandy. But folks will be lining up left and right to sign on to the Sanctity of Human Life Act. You know what this lets me know? This tells me that I need to be getting into, we need to be getting into Representative Brown and Representative Ryan's offices double quick. I mean, if you think human life is something that has some sanctity about it, well, this is the sanctity of fetuses bill that we know, really. But if you're convinced that there is sanctity to human life, wouldn't you expect them to just sign off right then and there, Johnny on the spot, lickety split, on the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act? Because this deals, that deals with little fetuses that are getting, and I'm not making light because it's real. Many of you have read the birth defect study. You know the breadth and horrifying scope of it. you know that a woman who is living and as well as she can, eating right, not smoking, you know, all the right things that happens to live in a mountaintop removal community, you already know that she's got 181% greater chance of giving birth to a baby with respiratory birth defects than a woman who chain smokes but doesn't live in a mountaintop removal community. You already know that, right? Sure. So you'd think Dr. Paul Demons from the Pits of Hell Brown and Zombie-Eyed Granny Starver Ryan would be out there chomping at the bit. They'd be looking for me. They'd be looking for us. Hey, where can we sign on to this? But, of course, it kind of goes without saying that they're not the measure. That being the Sanctity of Human Life Act, it says that a one-cell human embryo, before it has even become implanted in the uterine wall where it can begin to grow a placental sac and turn into something that looks like a tadpole, before it ever looks like something that's human. It says a one-cell human embryo gets all, this is a quote from the bill, all the legal and constitutional attributes and privileges of personhood. Now, it doesn't get to vote because it would have to be an 18-year-old single-cell human embryo before it could do, right. But it's got due process rights and it's got equal protection rights and it's got rights against self-incrimination and rights against search and seizure and rights against, wait a minute. We might have a constitutional problem here because there's another constitutional amendment in the Bill of Rights says that foreign troops may not be quartered in one's home. But if we allow people like Paul Ryan and Paul Brown to go reaching around inside women's insides, aren't they saying that they kind of want to be quartered? Yeah. Whoa. That's weird. The Republican Party wants to quarter their hands in women's organs in order to protect the penumbral rights of a single cell blastocyst. And that's the most important thing on the, well, it's the most important thing on the Republican agenda behind repealing that there Obamacare. It hurts. That's a great line, Marty. Marty notes something that Shannon Moore has said on the air, shrinking government down to the size where it can fit in a woman's uterus. It's true. Marty asks, the Sanctity of Human Life Act, does it also outlaw the death penalty or forbid mountaintop removal or put an end to our wars and occupations? Marty just says, somehow, I doubt it. You are correct, sir. It doesn't. But it's great. It's great for fetuses. Benedict in the chat room asking a good question. If the one-celled zygote has undocumented parents, does it get citizenship as a zygote, or does it have to wait? It says all rights, according to the language of the bill. All the legal and constitutional attributes and privileges of personhood. Jesus. Does that mean it? Do fetuses pay taxes? Well, I'm sure we'll need a fetal tax relief bill, right? No, they asked Paul Brown about it, and he said, as a physician, I know that human life begins with fertilization, and I remain committed to ending abortion in all stages of pregnancy. I will continue to fight this atrocity on behalf of the unborn, and I hope my colleagues will support me in doing so. There are 17 co-sponsors. 17. Cases of hopeless crazy. At least inside the House of Representatives. House of Representing. Irish Dave asking, so will those feti need photo ID to register their guns? Will armed guards be patrolling in them their parts? Inquiring mimes want to know. Going to be tough to get a gun in there. Dr. John has a question. Subject line, moment of conception. Let's think about this for a moment, he says. When a female sex cell divides during meiosis, the result is one healthy. It undergoes two stages of cell division. This is done to ensure only half of the chromosome pair is waiting for the male sex cell. This usually produces one healthy egg cell and three smaller cells that are supposed to just die off before conception. Oh, that'll never do, John. It's been suggested that sometimes those two smaller cells don't die off and can be fertilized, resulting in two conceptions at once. If that occurs, then both will die off soon after conception. Too few resources. So I gather that Brown is suggesting we need to start microscopically examining women's insides to make sure this doesn't happen. I think you're going to have to. Because even those cells that die off have all the rights and privileges of personhood? Dear. But, yeah, okay, there was something garbled in there, but I'm sure Dr. John will clear it up. Jim noting, in light of all the problems facing this nation, these actions can only be termed bizarre. And also, Jim, I'll see you're bizarre, and I'll raise you a twisted. These Republicans are sick and weird and bizarre and twisted. And only gets more so. Consider for instance, something else being said about children. And, yes, this is weird. the argument has been made. Not kidding. The argument has been made by David Barton, the personal so-called historian to the Beckerhead. You might want to sit down with this one. You might want to get maybe a little bit of duct tape and a tennis ball out just so that your neighbors won't hear the screaming. It'd be more of a kind of noise. Phony baloney historian, make it up as you go along guy David Barton are working together on a program called Foundations of Freedom. Now, they had their first show Tuesday. Let's see if we can get this audio out there. Because I can't stand to be the only person who's sitting here with my eyes crossing at the manifest idiocy of this. Now, this is the Beckerhead and phony baloney, make it up as you go along historian, David Barton, talking together about American history and how we solve some of today's more pressing social problems. Got it?
You take us into the late 1800s. There are school shootings.
There's attempted shootings.
Yeah, they're not school shootings. Well, the gun's fired, but they're not fired the way we think.
Right. The great example in the 1850s, you have a school teacher who's teaching a guy, and he's out in the West, a guy from New England has been searching for him, wants to kill him and find him. So he comes into the school with his gun to shoot the teacher. He decides not to shoot the teacher because all the kids pull their guns out and point it at him and said, "You kill the teacher, you die." He says, "Okay, the teacher lives." Real simple stuff. Save the life of there was no shooting because all the kids, and we're talking in elementary school, all the kids pull their guns out and says, "We like our teacher, you shoot our teacher."
There wasn't shooting. Kids did not shoot each other.
No. Again, two accidents I have seen in 200 years of everybody right. having guns. It just didn't happen.
Thanks to our good friends over at Right Wing Watch for watching this stuff so we don't have to. You got that? Now, see, we thought the NRA wanting to turn our educational institutions into armed camps was pretty well around the bend. But here, we've got the Beckerhead and this phony historian who just makes crap up, declaring what? How do you characterize this? Declaring that schools are better when sixth graders are packing heat? You heard that with your own ears. I wasn't even reading that in a funny voice. That was real. Really, that just makes you want to kick furniture, doesn't it? If only we would give our children guns to take to school, they could protect the teacher when people come to shoot up. But there are some questions of nuance here. Are we going to give them all assault weapons? Or are we? What really is the right firearm to give to a kindergartner? Maybe you start out with a little .22 and work your way up to the banana clip with 100 rounds, right? They can't stop. History proves armed children prevent school shootings. Yeah, I agree. Waggy in the chat room says, "Now my ears feel dirty." And, of course, he doesn't take into account it's not like out there on the prairie in 1858 was some PS-132 that had, you know, a few hundred students in it and 50 teachers or something. These were likely, in that era, what were called blab schools. Where answers were just hollered. It was constantly. Well, you can only imagine what a nightmare it was to the teacher. But all the grades were together. From first grade to sixth grade, or maybe even eighth grade, all the grades were in the same one room. I know a little bit about this because at one point in time, my grandmother was named best one-room school teacher in Fayette County, West Virginia. And she had kids. She had children in her class who were six, and she had children in her class who were 16. And the 16-year-old and the 6-year-old might be in the same class at some point, or in the same grade, rather. They were all in the same room. One-room schoolhouse. And honestly, I don't remember a single time of my grandmother telling me about all the children bringing their guns to school. And this is a pretty much wide-open, Wild West kind of place, even as little as 100 years ago. Wouldn't that just be wonderful? Ma'am, here's your little boy. Here's your little boy's books for the year. And here's his ammo. And here's his assault weapon. We'll be having barrel cleaning lessons on Tuesdays. Good question, Waggy. Do kids with guns always get A grades? Whew. Mother. It's very true, Dr. John. The best antidote for Foundations of Freedom, the PRISM West Virginia American History Series with Dr. Bill O'Brien and Keith Lilly, of course. PrismWV.org, and available on the Horn. So true. Arm the children. Probably better do that, though, because after all, if we arm them now, maybe it'll make it harder for that Obama to take their guns away. The California contingent of the Horn family. Are y'all familiar with a state lawmaker out there by the name of Tim Donnelly? Tim Donnelly responding to the news of the tepid attempts to rein in some of the gun violence in this country that was announced by President Obama, said he accused the president of politicizing this tragedy to impose an anti-Second Amendment agenda that would have done nothing to prevent the tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary. All his plan will do is make it more costly and more difficult for law-abiding citizens to exercise constitutional rights. Jesus. Arm the children. Let's get this screwed up. Arm the children. And don't limit anyone's access to any firearms whatsoever, and that will make it all a safer place. We've got that right, right? Yeah. I'll try not to start screaming. Yeah, yeah, Bill of Rights, man, me too. Bill of Rights, man, in the chat room says, reminds me of that great Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song, Arm Your Children Well. Eesh. Yeah, because who needs teaching, right? Right. So that's the close of this Thorn in the Side Thursday's filibobster. I guess we can forget about any of these allegedly upstanding Christian fiends. I guess we can, gun-loving fiends. I guess we can just take that part out of the Bible, that part that talks about beating plowshares into swords. Yeah, just to heck with that, right? Brother. Yeah, Irish Dave's got a bunch of good questions. Will those students open carry on the bus to school? I remember some bus rides that could have made good use of armed security. I guess that classic song, Don't Take Your Gun to School, Son, wouldn't get much airplay. So, no, that's where we are with the this evening's filibobster. It's time to start the conversation. Radio portion of the program. Jump in. You know the number, right? We've got one line on hold, but other lines are open. 304-658-3333 if you want to participate in the conversation. You can also, of course, participate by email. Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com is how you reach me. Any way you want to participate is fine. Chat room's open. Chat room's free. That's cool, too. So we will we'll take a little break. The Green News Report is on the way, this here being Thursday and all. Brad Friedman, Desi Doyen, ready with another installment. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Robert's $75 Down Under Challenge on the table and waiting for takers. He'll match the first $75 that come in with $75 of his own. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. Let your head fall all around me.
Thursday, January 17, 2013.
It's an issue which will afflict us in the conservation community for a generation to come.
Interior Secretary Ken Salazar steps down.
Everybody in the citrus business right now is worried. Everybody.
Crop killer. Freeze hits California citrus. 2012, the 10th hottest year globally. EPA squashes fracking drinking water study. Texas goes after Oklahoma's water. Plus, no, it's not your imagination. Spring is springing earlier than ever.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Climate. Climate's always changing, isn't it?
Yes, yes, it's always changing, Stuart Barney of Fox News. I give up. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, in our last episode, I complained about how it was freezing out here in Los Angeles and along the West Coast into the desert of Arizona, and that meant global warming was over. Now, it's going to be 80 degrees this weekend, so...
Just 48 hours later.
You're back on. Global warming, it's back.
Dr. Jeff Masters of Weather Underground says that an extreme jet stream pattern is causing the record warmth in the eastern U.S. and the record cold in the west. Research suggests that the record loss of Arctic sea ice this summer is driving those changes in the jet stream, causing more frequent extreme swings back and forth in weather around the world.
Oh, I knew it. It's always global warming's fault, isn't it?
Well, record cold is a crop killer for California citrus.
That's a cold, hard reality.
This week, temperatures dropping into the 20s for a second straight night.
And that's a big switch from last year, where the record warm winter meant that spring was springing earlier than ever. A new study published this week, the first ever comprehensive survey combining naturalist records dating back 160 years, shows that flowers are now blooming earlier than ever in the United States. In record hot years like 2010 and 2012, the study says flowering of indicator species occurred up to 24 days earlier than in the 1850s.
Actually, I can attest to that in my own backyard.
And that record warmth drove the record drought that still has its grip on the Midwest and is causing record crop losses. And that means not only rising food prices, but also a record crop insurance bill for U.S. taxpayers. The Agriculture Department estimates total crop losses in 2012 will be about $16 billion. That's nearly double the amount paid out for crop disasters in 2011. The record drought is also impacting water supplies. Now, Texas is suing both Oklahoma and New Mexico to get a bigger share of fresh water supplies. 87% of Texas is in moderate or severe drought right now, and the Lone Star State is taking their cases to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Water wars.
As we reported on Tuesday, 2012 was the hottest year on record for the continental United States, driving record heat waves, drought, and wildfires. But globally, 2012 ranked 10th hottest worldwide.
See, no big deal.
Since record-keeping began in 1880, the top 9 hottest years globally have all occurred since 2000.
Well, that's not good. And that sort of goes against Greg Gutfeld on Fox News and the little fit that he threw when Bob Beckel had the temerity to mention that this year was the hottest year on record in the U.S.
The global warming deniers said 2012 was the hottest year on record since 1875.
In the United States, not the world. That's the United States warming.
Why do you get so global warming?
Which is shit that hasn't happened in 15 years.
It hasn't happened in 15 years, Ms. Except for those last 10 years all being within the 2000s.
Fox News is a little confused about science.
Anyway, press on.
What the frack? In a bombshell exclusive, the Associated Press reports that the Environmental Protection Agency deliberately squashed an analysis that indicated fracking, the controversial natural gas drilling technique, caused methane contamination of water wells in Texas. AP obtained a confidential report showing that the EPA set aside strong scientific evidence of fracking-related contamination against a driller, Range Resources, after Range Resources threatened to withhold evidence and access for the EPA's ongoing comprehensive study of the impacts of hydraulic fracturing.
Why would the EPA agree to withhold that information to bury that study?
Apparently due to pressure from Range Resources.
Unbelievable.
Finally,
if this debate that is going on in Washington continues the way that it has started, I will tell you that conservation will be set back 50 years in this America.
That was the warning from Interior Secretary Ken Salazar at the Conserving the Future conference in 2011. Salazar announced this week he is stepping down. As Interior Secretary, the former Colorado senator was slammed by the oil and gas industry for mild reforms to oil and gas leasing and offshore drilling regulations after the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. Now, both the Interior and the EPA cabinet posts are vacant. Will Senate Republicans allow any new nominees for Obama's top environmental posts?
Not a chance.
I think we call that a snowball in hell.
Yeah, there will be no EPA director, I predict, for the next 4 years. We'll see if I'm right or wrong. For much more on all of those stories that we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. Number two underway. You know the number, 304-658-3333. If you've got something to offer, something to bring to the... bring to the conversation, just ring right in. Ring right in. Or you can reach email bobkincaid@gmail.com. Kevin is with us from Colorado Springs. Oops, wait, let me kill the music. Sorry. Faulty nut behind the media player.
Yeah, well, man, Bob,
there you are,
I
Kevin.
Sent you this email from... Faithful America, which is a left-wing Christian organization, talking about the speakers and guests for the inauguration. And I'm just totally flabbergasted and disgusted at the people who's been invited. Pat Robertson, Joseph Farrar, and this Messianic rabbi that sees Obama as a apocalyptic writings in his in Obama's speeches. And then if you look on the guest list, Benny Hinn, I'm just like, my God, there's two things that are either happening here. One, the president has no knowledge if he's invited, and some staffer, he's a right-wing nutbag teabagger, has invited these people. Or two, the president and these people are buddies, and all this talk that's going on back and forth is nothing but talk. And it just is amazing to me that the president could even think of inviting these people who have spoken out so much against him and have called him every name in the book. You're inviting him to speak and be a guest at your inauguration? And it just man, I'm disgusted. I mean, this country is coming to something that they don't want to see, and that's the intolerance that we all see now, but multiply it by 10 times if these nutbags ever get within an inch of power, like Michelle Bachmann has in Minnesota. So I just wanted to bring that up because it's, this religious stuff has always been a thorn in my side. But to see these names listed and to see what has been done just sickens me. Why? What's the point? Why not find somebody who isn't even interested in politics to be your, to pray your prayer at the inauguration? Never mind that by what I read out of the Constitution, the separation of church and state, we shouldn't be even having a prayer at the inauguration. So I've kind of said my piece here, but I wanted to know what you thought about it.
Kevin, it's can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just wanted to make sure you could. It's just another step down the slippery slope of the, toward the theocracy for which these people so obviously yearn. I'm looking at the email. I looked at it earlier, but I'm looking at it again, the email that you sent. This list. Oddly enough, Joseph Farah from World Nut Daily was also the one who was rolling around in the mud by the Dead Sea with Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, a week or so ago. This is they constitute a cabal at this point.
Do what?
They constitute a cabal at this point. And the fact that this is being done at the instigation of the House and Senate chaplains?
Yep.
Oh, it's revolting.
But yeah, up above the House and Senate chaplains are people that are planning this inauguration event who can overrule these guests, and they've done nothing other than deny, if you read the Media Matters story, they originally said they were going to remove these people, and then they said, no, I didn't have that conversation, according to Media Matters. And it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case. I just think it's a, you know, it's another case of the religious right trying to take control. But I can't believe the president or the president's staff would allow it, you know, and I have to come to one of two conclusions.
Well, the president and the president's staff have no control over what the chaplains of the two houses of Congress do.
Mm, well.
But it's obviously a genuine slap in the face, and it's intended for a specific purpose, and that is to, you know, all of this is still, here we are 4 years in, aimed at somehow delegitimizing that one in our White House, Kevin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And if I were talking to the president, I'd say, stand up, speak out. They don't, I mean, yeah, you might be perceived as an angry black man, but they call you that anyway, so why not? You know? The House chaplain, okay, well, you know, the House is mostly filled by Republicans, but the Senate chaplain, you telling me that the guy from Nevada, I can't think of his name right now,
Harry Reid,
Senator Reid, doesn't have some control over who the House chaplain is, you know, and that's what I find amazing, and yeah. It may be as a slap in the face to the president, but I just find it appalling that, you know, someone like Benny Hinn would come within 100 miles of the inauguration invited. You know, I would invite him to the men's room at the loneliest truck stop on the way to Washington, you know, kind of thing. I just have no respect for that man. And the Joseph Farrar, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to think. It's just amazing to me. If you read that Media Matters story, the woman that's planning the event talked about how she denied. She originally spoke with Media Matters and said that that wasn't who they had invited. They would be removed. And then when they were still on there, Media Matters contacted her again and said, what's the deal? And she denied the story. So, and she wouldn't even talk to Media Matters after that. So, you know, I'm just sickened by government at this point. It's what it goes down to. You know, we've got the right wing nutbags on the right, and we got the left wing who have control and power in two branches of government and who don't want to seize that control and power. And, you know, you have to begin to wonder what we're dealing with here. You know, is it much worse than we think it is? And are there people secretly that may say they're Democrats working for the other side? And, you know, how many times have we watched in the past 4 years bills die, but not just because of the House doing it, because the Senate wouldn't take any action on it, with a Senator Reid, who apparently doesn't want to change the rules on the filibuster. And what do you do? I mean, we can write, we can petition, we can get up and down like I'm doing right now and scream, and it just doesn't seem to affect this president or these senators in the House. And if you caught Mike Malloy last night, Dennis Kucinich is now part of the Fox Network, and I have to wonder about Dennis Kucinich.
Oh, I don't. What? I don't, Kevin. Frankly, it seems... That seems fairly shrewd. What would we rather see? Oh, let's see. How about a member of the, how about a right winger from the House that just left Congress? How about Alan West? You know, Dennis is always going to talk straight. He's not gonna modify his message just because he's getting a check from Rupert Murdoch. I think this is an opportunity to let him speak plainly to an audience that hasn't heard what a real live liberal or progressive sounds like. Alan Colmes was on there for eons, but he was a doormat for Sean Hannity.
Yeah, and I'm worried that it'll turn into the same thing as what's going on MSNBC between Mika Brzezinski and Joe. What's his name? I can't think of that name right now. Mika Brzezinski is treated like a doormat. She stands up for herself, at least, when she really has to. I got a really big kick out
Dennis
of...
I think Dennis is a lot more ferocious than Mika can ever dream of being. Plus, Mika doesn't come from a true liberal background. You know, she's one of those. She's a cruise missile liberal, if there ever was one.
So what would you, I agree with you? But what would you call Dennis Kucinich then? If you call Mika a cruise missile liberal, what would you call him? A nuclear bomb liberal or?
No, I've never. I don't recall. I don't recall Dennis advocating using cruise missiles on any. There was no louder voice and no more persistent voice against the Iraq and Afghanistan wars than Dennis Kucinich. So no, he's not a cruise missile liberal or a nuclear bomb liberal or anything of the sort, Kevin.
I see what you mean. I thought you were using it in a different context, the ferocity with which they advocated.
No. Cruise missile liberal is a term that refers to people who are ostensibly progressive or liberal, but at the same time, they espouse warmongering.
Right. And I see what you mean now. I was thinking of it in a different context. And while you're speaking about that, I don't understand how you could come to that position of advocating for all that the left stands for what the words of that brown-skinned Palestinian stood for, that the right wing has distorted. How you can say you're a true liberal and yet advocate for a drone missile to be sent on a hit list over to wherever and innocent people getting killed, you know. And, you know, I hear the argument that, oh, well, that's better than sending in our forces, but that still doesn't mean that innocent lives aren't being taken for nothing other than the whims of a government leader, whether that government leader is Democrat or Republican. And, you know, I, like I said, you know, there's very few true liberal talkers out there. You, Malloy, Rick Smith, and in fact, the Prism History Series, although I don't know their political affiliation, I would say that they're some of the best liberal talkers out there because they give you history as it occurred, not as you have heard. And I really appreciate that.
So, well, it's refreshing in the extreme. But the thing is, what's that old saying? Education has a well-known liberal bias, or facts have a well-known liberal bias, something like that.
Apparently, you know, I look at a fact and I say it's a fact. It's not liberal or conservative. It's a fact.
Yeah. But, by the way, you just got a note in, Kevin, from our buddy Andy out in California. He says, please let Kevin know we don't have a vociferous left wing. Please. In the Democratic Party, yes, there are some exceptions within the Progressive Caucus, but overall we have two corporate parties. And if you fall out of line with the third way Rahm Emanuel Democrats, you'll get Dennis Kucinich. Watch your district disappear right out from under your rear end.
Oh, yeah. And that's what I meant. I definitely do not believe we have a vociferous left wing. We have a left wing that apparently will not stand up for themselves at the times most needed. I mean, you can say, you know, that the president yesterday and the gun measures he outlined didn't do a lot, but I was more than I expected, to be honest. And considering all the threats of impeachment against him, if he even talked about doing these things, I was really surprised he did it. And so I've got to give him props for at least standing up there and saying, screw you, I'm going to outline this plan anyway. And I know it's not enough.
Well, what was disgusting out of, first of all, let's understand, yeah, it's a tepid response.
Yep.
But did you notice the number of supposed Democrats who went rushing out to the microphones to scream their undying devotion to the National Republican Rifle Association? Did you catch that part, Kevin?
Yep. I didn't catch the names or anything because I don't watch that much TV, but I know your senator from West Virginia was right up there with them.
Oh, sure.
I heard him talking on the radio today, you know, just in passing. I didn't really get to listen to the whole clip, but yeah, you know, apparently the NRA is much more powerful than Congress, and apparently they're paying off. They don't matter. It doesn't matter to them who they pay off as long as they get people to stand for the NRA. And I've often wondered, and I believe it to be so, if someone walked into some classroom where one of these congressmen or women or senators' children were and did what happened at Sandy Hook, how quickly the gun loopholes would close, how quickly they would move to create real regulations aimed at curbing this gun violence that is affecting our country. But, of course, you know, that's probably not going to happen, but, you know, Gabby Giffords was a middle-of-the-road Democrat, and I don't know for sure, but I will bet you that the last thing on her mind before this happened in Arizona was speaking out about gun control, and that's what it took for the Senator Reagan assistant getting shot for him and his family going after the Brady Bill. And, you know, of course, the NRA has to fight against it. And, you know, I just wish these people would get 1 hour of feeling the tragedy, the pain that the people in Sandy Hook will feel for a lifetime of what these families are going through, because six-year-olds didn't get a chance to be seven-year-olds because some nutbag was hoarding guns because she thought the end was coming. And eventually they got in the hands of her son, and he did what he did. But I don't know how to change it other than to continue to speak up and do what I can. But I think that's part of my concern today, and why I'm so upset by this really little thing, is that, you know, I have to question, and I am questioning, does it matter anymore? And what more can we do than what we're doing now? And if I could get an answer to that, of what more can we do than what we're doing now, short of more millions of people being in the streets. I know that's not going to happen anytime soon, so that would be my question. Between millions of people marching in the street and what we're doing now, what is there more that we can do? And I don't have an answer for that anymore.
I think, Kevin, I think we have to continue doing what we are doing. Consider that this country, one of the things that's driving the right gun goobs absolutely crazy is that this country is beginning to have an actual conversation about firearms.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we were not supposed to be allowed to even have that conversation. And that's why they're reacting the way they are. I got a story link from Corey in the Free State of Louisville a few minutes ago, pointing to promises that Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, has made that he's gonna gun up our SKUs. Because and what's the phrase he used here? This is just precious. He said, because I think self-defense is an important part of it.
Yeah, and the first time a teacher gets frustrated with a student, and we all reach that point of frustration sometimes, but once time a little bit mentally unbalanced teacher, who we otherwise wouldn't notice the mental unbalance, uses a gun supposedly there for self-defense to shoot a student whose only crime is being in school while black or Hispanic, I think they'll...
Okay, listen to these...
But I don't want that tragedy to happen.
Kevin, listen to these words. This is Rand Paul.
Yep.
Talking about Sandy Hook. He says, if my kids were at that school, I would have... Okay, let me preface this. Once upon a time, Rand Paul was asked about deaths from black lung. I know this sounds like it's not even connected, but it is. Rand Paul was asked about deaths from black lung. And he said, well, that's just, you know, accidents happen, and that's just the risks you take if you're in that business. Okay? He was asked about mountaintop removal, and he said, I don't think the people of eastern Kentucky are going to miss a few hills that it taken down here and there. Now, you know, because, you know, you're part of the Horn family, you know what mountaintop removal means. You know that we have... 1,000 coal miners die a year from black lung that's entirely preventable, all right?
Oh.
So that's the kind of attitude that swims around in the thin, soupy, gray settlings that slosh back and forth between Rand Paul's ears and pass for brains. Well, talking about Sandy Hook Elementary, here's what he said. if my kids were at that school, I would have preferred that the teacher had concealed carry and had a gun in her desk. Let that sink in, Kevin.
Oh, yeah.
Had a gun in her desk.
Yep.
Now, she's a school teacher. She's either going to have to keep the desk locked, but that's not much good if she's going to go a protecting people with her shooting gun.
Yep.
And if she unlocks it, what happens when some little seventh graders, eighth graders? I admire junior high, middle school teachers, because trying to teach children at that age, hell, just trying to be a parent of a child at that age is job enough. Get a room full of them together? Couldn't pay me.
Well, I'm sitting here as you're mentioning that, thinking back to my days in school, and I can think off the top of my head, just from elementary on to junior high, the times we got up there when the teacher wasn't in the room or not looking and got into her desk.
There you go.
Or not.
So he says that he wants teachers to have a gun in their desk, and then he follows it up because, you know, he's a deep thinker, Rand Paul. He says, is it perfect? No. Would they always get the killer? No. Would an accident sometimes happen in a melee? Maybe. But nobody at Sandy Hook had any defense, and he just kept shooting until he was tired and he decided to shoot himself. Did you catch that, Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
Would an accident sometimes happen in a melee? He's gun fantasizing. I mean, he's practically at the point of masturbation over this.
Well, I'd like to put some of these heroes into a situation like that and see what they would do, because most of them fantasize, oh, yeah, I'll whip out my .38 and shoot the killer with this semi-automatic machine gun who's going to the school. And it's not going to happen, nor is it going to happen in a crowded movie theater that the lights are out in, and he takes you completely by surprise by coming in the exit door and doing that. And if I found out my student was in a school and the teacher had a gun anywhere near the classroom, my student wouldn't be going to that school, because I don't have children, but you know what I'm saying. I value children's lives, that I don't want them being in a situation. May not even be my child's fault. Could be some other child that gets into the desk and starts playing with a gun. But these people don't seem to think about it. And the people that follow them apparently don't have that gray matter to figure out and think about what could happen. And to say that could an accident happen in a melee shows an incredible lack of concern for human life from someone that's supposedly a medical doctor. And most of the Horn family knows I'm blind. I would say that if Rand Paul told me he could restore my sight, I couldn't get anywhere near him. I wouldn't allow myself to do it, because I don't want to be a part of even letting him profit from my eye illness at all. And you know, I just don't understand what these people who follow people like Ron Paul. And I think the biggest part is a lot of them have not experienced tragedies in their life like this. and they haven't been in situations where their life has been in danger. And they listen to too much religious garbage on the TV that thinks God's going to save them when some shooter comes into a crowded movie theater and starts shooting. You know, God's going to, you know, I've heard it before, that God's going to always protect me. And then, of course, when he doesn't, then it's God had a reason for my child dying. He knows best, you know, and it just, very sad.
Mysterious ways, right. Well, see, that's probably what's going to happen next, Kevin, is in the midst of all of this, the next time there's a mass shooting, and let's just be quite serious, there is going to be a next time. And there will be a next time after the next time and a next time after the next time. We are next times as far as the eye can see.
Yep.
Because we don't want to do what is necessary to make this stop happening.
Yep.
And so one of these, I would say one of these coming next times is going to involve a shooter. It'll be a white male, perhaps young. There'll be a shooter, and there will be a shoot-backer. Because there was almost a shoot-backer in Aurora, and there was almost a shoot-backer in Tucson.
Yep.
And the one who was getting ready to shoot back in Tucson was about to kill the wrong people.
Yep.
Or the wrong person. But there will be a shoot back because, once again, gun sales went through the damn roof, Kevin.
Yep.
Upon the announcement yesterday of these incredibly tepid half measures. There will be a shoot back component to one of these mass shootings soon. And that horror will be a million times worse.
Yep.
Because you're going to have one. What did Rand Paul say? Well, you know, maybe there might be a problem, an accident in a melee. The fact that he used the word melee is enough to shoot. We could do a 3-hour program on that, couldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
He's describing them as melees. Could there be an accident in the melee? Well, maybe. See, I don't think there's any maybe to it, Kevin. I think it's an absolutely. There will be a horrible accident when somebody, having been indoctrinated through the for-profit media, through the NRA, that, you know, the only thing that'll stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Yep.
Somebody's going to shoot back, and a child or somebody's grandmother or somebody's sister or somebody's daddy will go down dead. And so we'll have to have another round of excuse making. Think back to the shooting that Juanita talked about last night on the program, the shooting at the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation.
Yep.
That man was overpowered by a bunch of people who did not have guns.
Yep.
Guns would have been no help in that situation. But determined people kept it from being a wholesale massacre. Because he came in ready to do everybody. Remember the manifesto that he left? He wanted to kill him some liberals, but since he couldn't get close to Nancy Pelosi, he's going to take it out on the liberals who support her.
Yep. And I would venture to say that in most situations, a gun by a supposed good guy is no help at all. You know, I just can't envision.
Well, in that situation, there's no such thing as a good guy with a gun.
Right.
If you've got a concrete block building, like schools so often are, and you've got one guy who has bullets bouncing off of walls, what happens when the good guy starts making bullets bounce off walls too?
Yep. Yep, and in Aurora, there were a couple of people wounded. They just did a story on in one of the papers about one of them. He was in a completely different movie theater, and he got wounded. So, you know, and like someone said in the jab, you know, when your aim under situations of stress like that is not good, no matter how good a sharpshooter you are, when you're in a situation like that, your aim is not the best. You're going to miss at least once or twice. And that's for sharpshooters. Imagine someone that doesn't take it out for target practice and that, just carries the gun for protection and decides to start shooting. So, you know.
And see, that's the thing. It's personal protection. It's not going out there to be the conscience of the community.
Nope. And really, the personal protection is in the gun itself, not the bullet, then the fire.
Right, it's like Waggy said in the chat room. He said, likely the good guy will panic and literally shoot everything that moves.
Yep.
You know, Agnes pointing out to me in chat, she says, the GOP have a Lone Ranger Zorro fixation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they have is a fantasy fixation that is not related in any way to the manner in which reality actually operates.
Yep.
And none of these gun goobs can figure out that the best way to not make any of this happen is to keep people with guns out of the building.
Yep. And not make it accessible to mentally ill people. Yeah.
Now, I'm not even so worried about the mentally ill at this point.
Have regulations that are going to weed out whatever the reason, mentally ill, felons, from even trying to get a gun, you know, and making the penalties for ignoring that background check so severe that you won't ignore them. But, like you said, they were tepid, but at least they were a step. So, I just know from growing up and as my, in my former life as an EMT and working for the county coroner, I've seen enough to know that there's more accidental deaths from guns and more suicides from guns than good guys shooting the bad guy.
Yeah.
And having seen enough gunshot wounds to last a lifetime, you know, the other fantasy these people have is that you're always going to hit the target, and then two, you know, if he wings you, no problem. Well, that's not real life. Even from a very minor gunshot wound, you're going to have problems. And, you know, I just want to see it improve. I want to live in a country where I don't have to worry. There's always going to be someone like Alex Jones out there, but I want them to be so far in the minority that he could get up and say anything he wants, and 99% of the population will ignore it. But not in this country. We seem to allow these people to be so vocal and not take a stand against them on the left, like you do, like Malloy does. And, you know, I heard a commercial today about so-called, we've got to get rid of so-called dirty coal. And I thought back to you saying it so often, you know, there is no such thing as dirty coal. It's all dirty coal. But yet, that little fairy tale continues to be preached. And you know, kudos for you, to you, for going up there to Capitol Hill and doing it. But, you know, it still continues to be a myth that's promulgated, and not even promulgated, it's just out there. Oh, there's clean coal. There's clean fracking. And it's just frustrating to me. I know we've got to continue the fight. I know you got to continue the fight for mountaintop removal. It's something we've got to do. But I want to know what I can do better to, before I leave this earth, having felt like I, as if I made a real difference. And
well, you're doing some of it now, Kevin. You know, ramping up your advocacy, writing letters to the editor. You know, you live in a Western state.
Yep.
Something as simple as a well-written letter to the editor that expresses some of the things you've been talking about here. Well, again, it's a change. It represents a change in the dynamic.
Yep.
Because we are not supposed to be having this conversation. Free speech be damned. The National Rifle Association has done everything in its power to keep this conversation from taking place, and now it's taking place anyway. And I don't know whether people understand it or not, but that is a monumental step in the right direction, just talking about this. Now, if we talk and talk and talk and don't do anything, that becomes a problem. But right now, it's having the initial conversation of what about what shape this sort of relief should take is tremendous.
Yep.
It absolutely is. Kevin, it's been a wonderful conversation this evening. I thank you very much. And, well, I'll try to get home tomorrow evening in time for a show, but if I don't, well, I guess Monday night will be the next one.
Well, thank you for letting me vent a little, and I hope you do make it home tomorrow night, but above all, drive safe.
And I'll try.
Hopefully Agnes will have a little something for you on the front porch, well, whatever time you get home.
Absolutely. Kevin, have a good night.
Get a little warming up when you get home.
So. All right. Take care.
All right, Bob. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And Agnes tells me Jim is with us. Hey, Jim.
Good evening.
How are you?
My name is Zorro, my mind at Candy. And if you don't watch, I'll whip your fanny. And that makes about as much sense as some of these fools are saying, doesn't it?
Maybe more.
Probably so. First of all, I want to wish her for last caller. If there's any way, any means of access, that man can see again, I would be very, very grateful and very happy.
Indeed, I think we all would. I think his comment was more along the lines of whether he would trust somebody who says melees happen with any kind of sharp instrument near his eyes. You know what I mean?
Well, I understand, you know, and that type of surgery is extremely delicate, and is, but there's a lot being done in optometrics and ophthalmological surgery today. So I just hope there's a way the man can regain his sight. Those are my good wishes to Kevin. Okay.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Let me ask you something. Is Benny Hinn really, or has he been invited to the inauguration?
He has been invited to some sort of congressional pray-in, Jim. For the House, organized by the House and Senate chaplains, that will be taking place on the day of the inauguration.
Benny Hinn. Well, I'll tell you, they need to go ahead and invite Peter Popoff. Have you ever seen him?
No. You know, when I hear Benny Hinn, I immediately think of somebody like Ernest Angley. You remember Ernest?
No, not really. I have to tell you the truth. I tried it.
He was the one that would knock people down. Healing him, and he had.
Well, the same thing happened on Benny Hinn show, and Peter Popoff is the one who wants you to send money in for prayer cloths and miracle water and all this other kinds of stuff. And, you know, I just, I watched him early in the morning before I watched Amos and stuff like that. And I thought to myself, Lord have mercy. How can this man live with himself? I mean, good God, he's got these elderly people sending their social security checks to him, stuff like that, or, and, you know, some of them make a decision whether or not to have food or medicine, and yet they're going to buy their way into some type of, what is it, salvation? I don't know. I don't know. It's no better than when John Temple used to preach indulgences back in the 16th century in order to build St. Peter's Basilica.
You know, it's
actually, you know, his money went to a much better cause as far as I'm concerned, because, I mean, you know, the sale of indulgences did help build a very beautiful church. And, you know, that's the only thing I can say about that. Okay.
Well, I understand, Jim, and, you know, it's interesting you would bring that up, because Ferg and I finally got to take the trip that he has long wanted to take, and we went and saw the National Cathedral today.
Oh, isn't it gorgeous?
It's beautiful. You understand the thinking and the theory behind that kind of monumental Middle Ages architecture, and it overwhelms you.
It took over 103 years to build, Bob.
Absolutely. And, well, did you know, Jim, that it got rather badly damaged in the August 2011 earthquake?
Yeah, it did. There were a lot of problems happening with the Belfry Tower and stuff like that. I would often go to Evensong on Sunday afternoon when I lived in D.C. and just enjoy the quietness and the splendor and the angelic sounds of the choir. It was very restful, a very beautiful place. And if you go into the transept of the church, you can look on the right and see the space window.
Mm-hmm.
In which there's a piece of moon rock.
Wow.
Did they not tell you that?
No, we were kind of pressed for time because we had to get back here for the show. So we self-guided ourselves the tour. Ferg's main purpose was to get down into the crypt and see the columbarium where Helen Keller, his hero, her ashes are interred.
Her companion is buried there too.
Yes, Annie Sullivan, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was a little, you mentioned selling indulgences.
It's a house of prayer for all people, Bob. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It really is.
But it was a little weird walking through the gift shop to get down to the crypt. I have to tell you that. And the first person to remark on it was Ferg, who said, "This feels a little bit wrong."
Disrespectful and degrading.
Oh, I don't think anything wrong with that. I mean, you know, I bought a lot of books there. And as a matter of fact, I bought a book called Cathedral Cats, and some of the names of these cathedral cats in Great Britain were like Skimble Shanks and stuff like that. And, you know, it was entertaining. I mean, things like this have to be maintained. I mean, when that building was first finished, they started a program in which they would be able to refurbish it. Because stone structures just don't stand alone by themselves.
No, they don't. Stone is weathered by wind and water just as if it was still part of the mountain that it came from.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Rome. You know, look at so many other
ancient cities and stuff like that. But we walked all the way up.
Like that. But the National Cathedral is very dear to my heart. It's a beautiful place, and that's all I can say about that.
We walked all the way up the nave to the
As far
the
as this gun thing,
gorgeous.
I sent you an email quoting from Kitty Kelly about Nancy Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Remember pistol-toting Nancy?
I had forgotten about that until you wrote, but you're absolutely right. She was a pistol-packing mama.
Oh, yeah. She said, "I got an itty-bitty gun in my purse, and it just shoots itty-bitty bullets that make itty-bitty holes." I thought to myself, well, sister, I would love to see how you'd feel if you were the recipient of one of those projectiles. Doesn't feel too good.
Not in the least. But, yeah, it's just a little gun.
Itty-bitty gun. in her itty bitty purse to shoot itty bitty bullets that makes itty bitty holes. Oh well. That's gone by the board, I guess. I guess Nancy's not worried too much about shooting people. She's probably worried too much about staying around for a while. But nonetheless, I just wanted to mention that to you because I thought that was sort of a cavalier attitude about, you know, fire weapons and firearms and things of that nature, to tell you the truth.
Well, there is a cavalier attitude, Jim, and it pervades this entire debate on one side of it. The Rand Paul thing has me something approaching apoplectic. But so,
do you know where Rand got her last name?
Wait, who?
Rand, Ayn Rand got her last name?
No.
From a typewriter. Remington Rand.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
And that was brought out in that film, The Passion of Ayn Rand, with Helen Mirren. Now, whether that's true or not, because I don't want anybody throwing rocks at me, but that's what they said.
I don't doubt it in the least.
Because her name was not Rind, Rand. It was some long sort of like, I can't remember it now, but I'm sure someone will surface it. But it was a very long Semitic name, and she came from St. Petersburg. I think she was born in 1905. But the reason she chose Rand was because she was using a Remington Rand typewriter.
And then Rand Paul, in turn, was named for her.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Hitler typed both of his books on a Remington Rand portable.
It still doesn't excuse the tortured grammar and the bad instructions. Yeah. But, no, you're right. There's a cavalier attitude that attaches to all of this stuff, Jim. These people who, there's another guy out here who has declared that firearms are essential to living the way God intended. And this is a member of the California legislature. His name's Tim Donnelly. I mentioned him a little bit ago.
Yeah, I think you did. Maybe I missed that. But, you know, I don't think there were many firearms around during biblical times, to tell you the truth. I think they had basically had slingshots, bows and arrows and stuff like that. But I guess, you know, you got to keep up with times and modernize, right?
Right, because what's the point in living if you can't have a semi-automatic assault rifle with a 100-round clip, right?
Well, you got it. There he is. And, you know, how many people have been killed since the shooting in Connecticut? I think it's like 85 or 87. Is that right?
No, I think there's been, I read the other day that there's been something like 600 firearm deaths in the United States since Sandy Hook.
Well, that's what they've admitted to on MSNBC.
Maybe I got the number wrong, but still.
Well, I hope you did. By God in heaven. I mean, it seems as though there are so many copycats and stuff like that with these weapons in hand. And
do you disagree that at some point?
Listen, I got to tell you this.
Yes.
Your favorite person was discussing the metric system.
No, stop it.
And they couldn't understand why everybody couldn't be Fahrenheit and why Celsius was so difficult. And then the conversation reverted back to the metric and people put a little line through their sevens and stuff like that. And Great Wonder Boy said, well, you know, the meter is shorter than the yard.
Does this mean we have to change it to Metric Monday?
I don't know, but I started to call him up and just say, you fool, a metric yard or a metric measure is 39.37 inches. But no, I didn't. I said, you know, why cast my pearls before swine, lest they be trodden underfoot? I mean, somebody would have interpreted that as some kind of a smart aleck remark and know me by the sound of my voice, and I would have to have some type of defense mechanism employed over here because these people are so damn crazy. But yeah, he was going on about that, and I thought to myself, God, why is this guy allowed on the air, and the responses that these people have. One guy was talking about an AR-15, and he said, I've got to have my AR-15 because that's what I'm going to defend my family with. And I thought to myself, God in heaven, I said, who's after you?
Right.
Are you running a still or something on your property? Or, I mean, this was just the thoughts going through my head, and I just said, no, let's just turn over. And I grabbed Rupert Murdoch, and just said, let's take another snooze after hitting the close button on the radio. This is just bull.
Did they get around to alleging that the metric system is also a communist plot, Jim?
Absolutely.
No,
the first thing I was going to bring up to you.
Oh, my goodness.
And they thought that anybody who made their sevens with a line through them was a communist.
Well, that explains a lot, because I make my sevens with a line through them.
I have ever since I was taught to write. Because my grandmother was French, and that's exactly the way she made her sevens. That's the way I made my sevens. And I got into a lot of crap at school because they were saying, why is your son making these sevens look like F? And, of course, my mother got into a real short decision about that. So they never questioned that again. She took care of that real quickly.
Yeah, the un-American metric system.
Exactly. I mean, the metric system is something of these communist nations who are attempting to subvert the American dream and all this stuff. And of course, the metric system is so much more scientific and so much more easily convertible. I mean, look at the English system. What is it? A rod is 16 men lined up outside a church on Sunday, and an inch is like 3 peppercorns.
Yep.
I don't know how to get into the volume of the stuff, and gallons, imperial gallons, and stuff like that. But I don't want to get off on that tangent, but I thought I would mention, because I know you love to hear things coming out of the other side of the state, and I just wanted to mention it to you.
Made my night. Just made my night. The communist conspiracy to take away all of our units of measure.
Like fluoride, stuff like that. I mean, back in the 40s, that was considered a communist conspiracy, wasn't it?
Fluoride mandrake. In
I mean, fluoride was. I mean, they were talking about the Comintern was attempting to subvert the dentition and dental health of the American population by introducing fluoride, stannous fluoride, into our water. And there were a lot of people who went along with that kind of stuff. It's just, so I mean, this kind of crazy is not just recent. It's been around a long, long time, and we've talked about this before.
But I thought we took care of some of this. I thought we had the big metric debate back in the 70s or something.
Oh, there's still some who are holdouts against it.
And by the way, you'll be pleased to know that Fritz out in Arkansas said, "Dear God, poor Jim needs to quit listening to that craziness."
Poor Jim only listens to it when he needs to laugh and a guffaw. But I never call him back, you know, under an assumed name or blocking my number because, you know, it's not worth my time.
Well, Fritz also says, based on this conversation, he says, I will start writing lines through all of my sevens now. And speaking of sevens.
Well, I'm glad because I mean, it's a very good thing. And there was even some type of pretense about 2 o'clock as opposed to 1400. But then that was offended, of course, because it's military time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Fritz also says that, speaking of the number 7, it is 7 degrees Celsius here in rural redneck southeast Arkansas. So.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, it's 32.7 in my house and 72.7 in my, outside my house and the other. But it's supposed to get real warm tomorrow, isn't it?
Not last I checked. Agnes was warning me it may be an ugly little drive home tomorrow.
Well, I hope it's not. But with the weather changing, and you had mentioned earlier that we had so many changes in our climate, it's really wreaking a havoc with agricultural people because we're in California. I'm sure they're probably lighting smoke pots, wouldn't you think?
Oh, I saw photographs of oranges encased in ice. where ice had frozen on the oranges hanging on the trees in Southern California. That crop may be in real trouble, and the price of orange juice will probably shoot through the roof.
Oh yeah, I'm probably sure. I mean, that's the world's largest economy. I think fifth largest economy. But listen, I've said all I need to say, and I'm going to leave you where I found you and wish you a safe trip home.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. It'll be nice to get home. This place is interesting to be in, but after a while it gets a little weird.
Tell me about it. Live there, done that.
Take care, Take Jim. Care. Have a good night. That's our buddy Jim calling from not too awfully far from the home studio there. He's on across the river a ways. Let's see, Agnes, do we still have Sergi calling from Texas?
Hey there, Bob.
Hey, Sergi, what's happening, man?
You know, I just got home from a little shopping right now, and I called in. I didn't catch the first half of the show. Been listening since about 30 minutes ago, but I'm not sure if you've mentioned it. Yet the news about the representative of Central Texas authoring a bill to basically make it a felony to enforce any federal gun legislation that's passed in the future. I'm not sure if you covered that story.
I haven't covered it. I've run across it, and it just made some of these things just make me want to make sort of little strange forest animal noises. Why introduce this stuff, Sergi? It's not going to pass constitutional muster. It's got to go.
I mean, I was on Facebook before I left to go to the store, and I saw this. I'm just like, I've got to bring this up on Bob's show because it's, two things come to mind. You know, first off, the founding fathers, when they put in that, what is it called? Supremacy clause, I think is what it's called.
Yes.
Where, federal law trumps state law. Yeah, this is exactly what they were talking about when it came to these.
And it still didn't slow them down, though, Sergeant, because years later, or a few decades later, you get the nullificationists going real good, and that was the first secession crisis. And yet, here we are 150 years on down the road, and you've still got these idiots running. Because essentially making it a felony to enforce a federal law is, in essence, at its most basic level, that is a nullification act. It's a nullification act. It says that the states have the right to nullify the actions of the federal Congress. And this issue has been settled for 150 years.
And see, you know, and, you know, basically there's several things I wanted to mention about it. You know, number one, isn't an attempt by someone in a state to subvert the power of the federal government, isn't that treasonous? Like, I'm not sure if I'm recalling that correctly. But
I think you could color it as that. You could certainly make the argument that it is a treasonous act.
Because when you're trying to subvert the power of the federal government, it just sounds like treason to me. And, you know, in addition, one of the reasons I like this show and, several other progressive talk shows, this was on Channel 5. The media is still giving these wackos airtime because, oh, we got to get both sides.
Right.
It pisses me off royally.
But it should anger you. But that's par for the course, isn't it, Sergio, for the way that the for-profit media behave. It's the same approach they use in biology classrooms. You teach the controversy, right?
Oh yes, teach the controversy. You're talking about the evolution versus creationism?
Yes.
Oh yes, I teach the controversy. have you heard, or, and I'm sure if you haven't heard, I'm sure many of the other people listening have. I think his name's Roy Zimmerman. Ever since that George Zimmerman guy, unfortunately, get their names confused. But Roy Zimmerman, who has this song up on YouTube called Creation Science 101, and it's a video of him sitting in a lecture hall in a college, you know, and he introduces the song by saying, you know, they want to teach creationism in the schools. Well, I say teach that, but also teach every single myth out there just to balance it out. You know, they don't want you to know about other creation stories. They just want you to hear about theirs.
Right, right. And all these fools that want prayer in school, I think we should give them prayer in school. And everybody gets a rug, and three or four times during the school day, all the kids get to turn toward Mecca and bow down and pray. And when the little fundy said, "Well, no, that wasn't the prayer we wanted." Well, I'm sorry, it's prayer. You know, or maybe teach the little fundamentalist kids how to make the sign of the cross over their chest and eat the magic cracker and play with those beads and stuff. Yeah, that'll be fine. The Baptists and the Methodists, no, that wasn't what? No. But they want prayer in schools.
And, you know, when I read stories like what I saw earlier, you know, it just makes me think, and this is my, I guess is my overall point here, and it's called other than just being, I don't know why I still get surprised at what the right wing does. Maybe I'm just young, but, you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, it just dropped jawed at what I saw, and that's the reason I called in. But I think what I'm trying to get to is that what on earth is making the right wing get more and more unhinged? That's what I want to know. Is it the black president? You know, is it, you know, LGBT rights advancing? Is it a combination of all kinds of stuff? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, what is making them lose their minds already more than they had lost them?
I remember the hunting of Bill Clinton. And they were insane over him, too. They've spent 8 years absolutely obsessed with what was behind his zipper. They can't stand these reactionary right-wingers. The difference between now and then, though, is that then they were nutty. Now they are full-on, you know, just poofling and crazy. But, yes, the thing that drives them maddest about Barack Obama is the color of his skin. Because they have, and you know, when you're channeling in the year 2013, when you're channeling ideas like nullification from the late 1820s, early 1830s, yeah, you know, it's got to have a racist component to it. Because after all, the thing that drives them craziest, Obamacare, was crafted by the Heritage Foundation. It was, for God's sakes, a Republican bill. But the black guy wanted it, so it must be bad. So I don't think...
Oh, yes. I believe it was Rachel Maddow that I learned all about the history. I didn't even know that Obamacare was originally a Republican idea until I think it was Rachel Maddow that, you know, gave, you know, this is one of the reasons I like watching her show so much. You know, she gave us a nice history lesson on that.
Yeah. They are completely unhinged, and wouldn't you give, you know, like Kevin was talking about this pray-in for the the House and Senate chaplains. What would you give to be a fly on the wall for that? And, oh, dear Lord, please save us from that one in our White House. Deliver us from him, Lord. End our bondage, sweet Jesus. You can hear it, can't you?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Speaking of old ideas, because, you know, as I said, maybe I'm young, but I really need to stop scrolling down to the comments section whenever I read news stories like this, because there was this wacko in the comments, just like, his comment was pretty short, and I'm not going back, I'm not slogging back through that comment section to get the exact wording. But to paraphrase what he said, sounds like a state's rights issue to me, just like that war in Northern aggression that happened. I almost broke my desk from my head hitting it. I almost broke my poor desk. And it's so, this desk isn't that sturdy. I probably could break it with just my head if I really honestly tried. But, I mean, you know, just on that topic a little bit, I mean, yes, that was about states' rights, so-called rights, because the states wanted the so-called right to keep their slaves. They never realized that last part of the sentence. They ignored that convenient part.
There we go. The Second Amendment was, like that article from Black Agenda Report pointed out, the Second Amendment was drafted partially for the purpose of enabling slave hunters to go out armed to the teeth. So.
Yes, and I was reading, I think one of the people in the Skype chat posted the link to the image on Facebook of in the 60s when black people wanted guns for protection from police brutality and such. The NRA was all for gun control then, keep it out of their hands.
Well, Ronald Reagan was all for it, Sergi. Ronald Reagan helped get that bill through in the 60s in order to, because he was scared to death that the Black Panthers had him a few guns.
And I guess I can say, I mean, you know, I can kind of tie it in. I believe today's Thursday, correct? I always lose track of days. Can be my thorn in the side for Thursday. And just the gun nuts, they just do all this for publicity to rile people up and to get them. I mean, this is why we have crazy people like the guy who murdered Dr. Tiller.
Exactly.
Because the gun nuts rile people up with crap like what this, I don't even know what his name is. It's not important anyway, the representative in the Texas House. It is a thorn in my personal side, just because I honestly feel less safe walking the streets or biking the streets or mopeding or whatever on the bus, on the train. I feel less comfortable with all these because I know that all around me are right-wingers all riled up about something. And they might just decide to take it out on the little black kid on the moped.
Right. Because, you know, Rand Paul says that melees sometimes just happen. Sometimes you just have a melee. Maybe it's in the, you know, it's just a classroom. You're in the middle of geography, and sometimes a melee breaks out. And, well, there may be accidents. It won't be perfect. Jesus. God. It's terrifying, isn't it? It's just terrifying. And, yeah, these people do rile easy. But I would highly recommend, and I think I mentioned this already because I'm in the middle of a reread right now, but I would highly recommend to anybody who wants to understand some of this mindset, there is an excellent chapter on firearms in Joe Bajan's book, Deer Hunting with Jesus.
Yes, I've heard you mention this book several times. Let me, how do you, I guess I could just type in deer hunting with Jesus. It'll bring up his name.
Yeah, it's right there. It's right there at Amazon. You can get it as a Kindle ebook, or I'm sure you can probably get it at Barnes & Noble, too, or, you know, for Nook or whatever. Or you can probably get a hardback, or a, you know, rather a hard copy, not necessarily a hardback, but you can get a hard copy as well, probably for something like $5 or so. But it should be seminal. It should be required reading for anybody who actually, really, and for true wants to understand the mindset that leads to this kind of problem. Because, you know, and Joe is quite the beauty of his writing and his prose was that he had a real love for the white redneck class that he grew up in and I grew up in. He had a real love for it and was very forgiving and very understanding and very tolerant. But at the same time, he also recognizes just kind of how dangerous they can be. And it's real.
I'm definitely going to seek that book out. Well, like the first place I always check is the library, just because, you know, I can check them out. And,
oh, here.
You know, I think here in Fort Worth, I believe it's 2.5 weeks you get to read the book. And that's plenty of time for me to read. I mean, I don't have much else to do.
This won't take you 2.5 days.
But I'm definitely going to add that to my reading list because the overall, just the gone culture in this country scares me because, I mean, just being a black guy in a state like Texas and not being in one of the islands of semi-reason like Austin, it's scary. It's just,
oh, I have no doubt it would. Well, I mean, it's entirely different, but it's not much, but it's not that different from being liberal and progressive in a place like Alabamistan or Appalachistan, for that matter.
Or Georgia. I believe somebody in the Skype chat mentioned Mike Malloy, the sheriff or something, recommended him to carry a gun. Is that correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because of death threats or something. I mean, if I was in your shoes, I'd probably have the same kind of worry just being progressive in West Virginia, you know.
Yeah.
It's just being a, you know, a black liberal in Fort Worth, Texas. And I know that there's latent racism all over the place and occasionally it boils over with daily results. You know, Zimmerman with Trayvon Martin.
Exactly. Hey, Sergi, it's really good to hear from you. I appreciate you calling in. Just kind of, you know, kind of watch that pot boil down there as Texas gets to rolling real good with some of its secessionist urges. But I'd keep a bag packed if I were you.
Oh, believe me, I have several bags packed in a luggage cart for all of them. But either way, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's always good to talk to you, sir.
Keep on fighting the good fight. Spreading the progressive truth.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Sergi calling from, well, you heard, the general Fort Worth area. If I'm going to sit there and talk about Joe Bajant's remarks on guns, he said, toward the end of the gun chapter, he was talking about a guy named Glenn. He says, Glenn's creepy narrative had less to do with the realities of combat in Iraq and more to do with boasting about the warrior psyche and American technology. The people around that fire loved, and he's sitting around a fire at a reenactor's show in Virginia. The people around that fire love the technology. They mentally caress every cartridge and enjoy the solid weight of the handguns under their coats. Nearly all of them have concealed weapon permits, and nearly all of them have instabilities that would seem to make them a hazard with those weapons, usually unwarranted suspiciousness and anger toward authority. Media portrayals of a hyper-dangerous America inflame these feelings. Despite their bravado, these men fear the greater world. To anyone unfamiliar with guns, it probably seems downright amazing they don't blow away the meter reader or the neighbor's kid who crawls into their basement or their girlfriend some drunken summer night. Such incidents happen but are extremely rare. Again, it appears that even the strangest gun-owning Americans have things under control when it comes to everyday gun safety. But we've had 4 years of the Obama administration, I'd note, and they're getting a little bit edgier. And Joe Bagent continues in Deer Hunting with Jesus, yet I shudder to think about what the Glens and the Donnies of the world will do if one day things spiral out of control. What happens when this country finally hits peak oil demand and the electrical grid starts browning down and even little things become desperately difficult or unavoidable? What happens if the wrong kind of president declares the wrong kind of national emergency? What will be the first reflex of those hundreds of thousands of devotees of lethality? You understand what he means by the wrong kind of president, right? He's not talking about Democrats versus Republicans. Because in the minds of those gun folks right now, we've got the wrong kind of president. Phew. It's a little unnerving out there. And frankly, with everything shaping up for the inauguration here, you can always feel this place ratcheting up to something approaching a fever pitch. You get a sense that there's going to be very little in the way of tolerance. There's going to be not much in the way of shenanigans tolerated. So that's part of the reason we're getting the heck out of here. You know? Yeah. Just an update to Robert's Down Under Thursday challenge. We are $35 of the way toward the $75 we need to raise so that we will have the evening's fundraising taken care of before we hit the road tomorrow. That leaves $40 more. Four folks at $10 a piece would work just fine. Eight at five, two at 20, one at 10, and one at 30. You know how it goes. But we really appreciate Robert making the offer to double the contribution this evening up to $75. Thank you very much, Robert. Had a note in, had a kind extension of help from Gregory a couple of nights ago. And I sent a note along of thanks, and he said, no problem. Since I've shaken off the need for Sky Daddy, expensive cars, and loose women, Jesus, I tend to have a few extra coins in my pocket each month. Also, the local AM radio station that served as the voice for the black community in Dallas for over 40 years was recently sold without notice at the beginning of the year. The station now broadcasts all of its programs in Korean. Since I wish I could have done something to keep the only station in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex where you could hear old-time radio afloat, you know, with real people hosting shows that you could call and talk to and even request a blues song, it would be almost unbearable for me to know that I had the opportunity to assist in preserving a wonderful program like yours and did nothing. And who said us godless, anti-fascist, anti-colonialist, anti-war, pro-choice, women's rights, love and equal opportunity, tree-hugging, filthy liberals don't have a moral compass? Take that, Robert Jeffress. That being said, keep up the excellent work, says Gregory, and I will definitely continue listening and supporting. Thank you once again for all that you do. One love, signed Gregory, and then P.S., the smoothie whisperer, absolute freaking gold. I laughed until tears were streaming down my face. Gregory, what date was that? I remember that night. Hell, I remember this. I remember the event that occasioned the story. Just had some bad runs of luck at McDonald's there for a while. He fixed it. Oh, God. But thanks to all of you who helped keep all of this going. It's about coming up on 8:30. And I'm going to take a little break and come back, see if you guys want to continue the conversation any, or whether I need to filibuster the last 30 minutes of the program. You know the number, right? 304-658-3333 to get involved with the program. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. @gmail.com. One of the things I miss about being on the road is not having my full complement of music. But as it is, we'll get through. Gregory mentioning being able to request a blues song reminded me of something. So we'll take a run at a couple of tracks and come back. This is Conversation Radio on America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
Walking down the levee with my head hanging low, looking for my sweet mama, Lord, but she ain't here no more. I'm in Mississippi, and there's mud all in my shoes. The folks in Louisiana got the high water blues. I swear I'm crying, can't keep from crying. Mississippi heavy water blues. Standing here a-looking at all of this mud, my good gal washed away in this Mississippi flood. I thought I heard her moan on the Arkansas side. Come across, sweet daddy, Lord, and let your mama ride. I swear I'm crying, can't keep from crying. Mississippi heavy water blue. Mama, your daddy misses you. Got lots of mud and water, don't need no water cold. I just need sweet mama voice to satisfy my soul. Lord, 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 she was so kind and true. Said no other man could love her, Lord, cause we are blue. I swear I'm crying, can't keep from crying. Mississippi heavy water blue. It's hard, hard times, and my house got washed away. And I'm crying how long for another payday. Lord have mercy, I feel the ground shake. Old town's a sinking, Lord, and heavy water breaking. I swear I'm crying, can't keep from crying. Mississippi heavy water blue. Mama, mama, your daddy misses you. Son, make that old guitar call her one time. I call her, but she just won't come. Like a bum without a dime. and it just keeps raining all the time. The day she went away, the blues walked in and met me. If she stayed away, old rocking chair gonna get me. Every day I pray that the good Lord gonna let me walk out in the sunshine again. Can't go on, everything I love is gone. Stormy weather, I wonder if she's gone to stay forever. And it just keeps raining all the time. Yes, it just keeps raining all the time.
Like a little slide action. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the Thorn in the Side Thursday night, and heading home to West by God Almost Little in the morning. Agnes tells me that we have Isaac on the line. Let me pop back up. Are you there, Isaac?
Yes. Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good, good. You know, I was listening, and I decided to call because two things. I'm going to mess with you, so be prepared, Bob.
Okay.
But I was listening. I said, wow, Bob just doesn't sound right. I sound down and out, depressed. And I was going to call and ask you what's going on. But then the song selections you played, sounds like you're lonely for Agnes. You're waiting to get back home.
I am. Like I said, this is an interesting place, but it isn't home.
Yeah, I can tell. Stormy weather. And what was the song before that?
That was, let me check here. Sitting Here Picking the Blues. And started off with Mississippi Heavy Water Blues.
Okay. Well, they sound good. They sound good. But not going to mess with you anymore. But what I wanted to tell you, deal, Mr. Stress.
Yes.
And I know he's listening.
Yeah. In fact, as a matter of fact, Agnes accidentally dropped his call a little bit ago. So if he can call back, he's welcome.
Okay, then. Well, I just want to put it out there. If the Horn didn't know the people out there, Bill is a legend.
Yes, I know.
And, you know, I'm very, very impressed. Well, you know, I love music, and I'm involved in the music industry. And so I appreciate talented people that know how to play instruments. And especially I appreciate individuals who have some history and substance in their music and style. And about a year ago when Bill called in, and I've listened to you for quite some time, but when Bill called in, there was just something about him that made me really turn up the volume. Pay attention to what he was saying. And so I did my little research, and I've been finding a lot of YouTube clips on Bill. Now, he's very modest, okay? And but when I do talk to him, you know, I try to encourage him. I like to learn, you know, and he's always telling me, well, you should call into the show, Isaac. And I told him, I normally don't call in, but, you know, I like to listen. You know, you don't need to learn when you're listening. You can't learn when you're talking. And, but I really enjoyed listening to him. But what blew my mind, if no one knew about it, that Bill was inducted into the Columbus, I mean, not the Columbus, but the Cleveland Blues Society Hall of Fame back in 2009. Were you aware of that, Bob?
Not until you wrote me about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, man with fascinating stories, you know, and he knows a lot of history, but just in the music aspect of what he talks about, I'm just fascinated. I can listen all day long. So, Bill, and I hope the warm people don't mind this, you know, when you're feeling a lot better and you want to talk about your music career, hey, there's definitely one listener on the horn that would like to hear, and that's me. So,
yeah.
Very interesting person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, the thing with the Horn family is that, Isaac, there's such a broad array of talents and different life experiences. I think I never cease to be amazed from one show to the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. I mean, you have a lot of interesting callers out there, but I just wanted to get that across, you know. And if Bill comes up, cut me off, okay? If Agnes tells you he's in the queue, you know, cut me off. You know, I'll be glad to hear him talk. But other than that, you've been doing okay?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm hanging in there. Like I said, tired and ready to go home. And the next couple of weeks are going to be incredibly busy. I'm not complaining. It is what it is. Let's see. Drive home tomorrow. Prism broadcast on Saturday. And I guess we're going to drive back here on Tuesday just to avoid the general madness of the inaugural crowd. Fly to San Francisco on Friday, back Monday, and here in D.C. the following week. Maybe get to go home, and then it looks like I'm out to go and try to stir up a little bit more opposition to that god-awful looming disaster in Wisconsin in the middle of February. So it's just a little busy, that's all.
And your son is enjoying his time with you down there in D.C. too?
Oh, yeah. He's become quite the capable advocate. He's very good at what he does. He's learned well. He knows the information and is able to convey it with real authority and genuineness, because, you know, it's his generation that's being screwed with that stands to be the most poisoned out of this. So he brings that to the table, and he brought his guitar with him this time through and sat last night and just noodled around and played some beautiful stuff. He's really coming along nicely.
That's great. That is great and cool. I did that with my kids. And my son, where I would take them on the road with me or different meetings, stuff like that. And so to get a chance to see what dad does, you know, and I can imagine what your son is soaking up right now. And probably when he gets in his 40s, he'll kick back and think about, like, wow, you know, my dad took D.C. and did this and that. My dad thought about Mountaintop Mobile for to help these people in West Virginia, and a lot of other things that, you know, that he's witnessed. So he'll definitely remember that when he gets older. That's cool.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope it means as much to him as it does to me to have him here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very, very cool. But I'm not going to keep you long, man. I just wanted to mess with you first because I sounded real down, but I understand. And you know, the first lady there, she sounds like a very nice lady. And when I spoke to her briefly before you put me on the air, but I understand. I understand. I would be sad, too.
Well, and it all gets better tomorrow. And if we've just got decent driving weather, everything will be okay. I just hate making a 6-hour drive into a 12-hour drive because of blowing snow and that kind of evil.
So has it started snowing in your area yet?
No, it hasn't. And but Agnes tells me it's nasty over there at home. I'm looking at the forecast and it says sunny tomorrow here and sunny back in almost level. but one never knows. So tonight, as soon as the show's over, we'll tear down the rig here, pack everything up, start carrying stuff up out to the vehicle, and get out of here as quickly as possible in the morning. Because the longer you wait, the worse the traffic gets. So all of that's kind of in my head. I guess maybe that's what you were hearing.
Yeah. Well, you have a safe and successful trip on the way back home, and you'll be on air Monday?
Yes. Yes.
Cool.
And you got an aw thank you, Isaac, from Agnes. She just chatted that to me. So.
Welcome back. You're very well.
Well, that's the funny thing. Everybody likes Agnes. Well, I'm jealous. You know, she comes back and says hello into the microphone, and the whole chat room goes nuts, and she starts getting fan mail. It's like, you know, what am I, chopped liver?
Well, I'm going to be nice, because, you know, I can say some things, but I'm going to be very, very nice. But when you get back home, do your thing, brother.
There's things to be done. You take care. You take care, Isaac.
And do it with. Okay, then you take care, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Isaac calling from Ohio. About 11 minutes before the hour, and I'm sorry if I've just been kind of flat. These things happen. You start getting into the mode of thinking about getting on the road and getting home, and it begins to, well, it'll wear you out. And that, and we took a little trip in the afternoon today, and there was some hiking around. You know, there was a bit of a walk involved, but it was awfully nice to see the National Cathedral. And you have those little things that happen, like meeting the Planned Parenthood, the canvassers there outside the Woodley Park metro station. And she was just didn't have any money to give her or anything, but she was a wonderful conversation and talked about it. Well, it was almost like a conversation on the show, trying to understand why it is that these right wingers are so obsessed with women's bodies. Then it was a nice conversation. But then we got back on the metro and rode back. And I don't know. I'm a pretty good hiker, pretty good walker. But after, I'll be 50 this month, so that's been on my mind too. 50. Whoa. And for all the people who are 60 and above in the audience, in the Horn family, yeah, I know. Don't bother. Oh, you puppy. So that's where everything stands. And like I said, I hope there will be a program tomorrow night. There will be a show Monday night, and Prism, of course, Prism from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday. Part of the reason we're not going to be, apart from the zaniness and just the general lunacy of it, part of the reason we're not going to be here for the inauguration is that Agnes said if it can be avoided, avoid it, because she said she had a bad feeling about it. And I'm not making light, and I listen to her when she says things like that. And with all of this, all of the responses to the tepid half measures that were offered up as a means of trying to maybe make the next Sandy Hook Elementary massacre not happen, the responses to that make me think that maybe it would be better, and the better part of valor, to not be here on Monday. Case in point, Buster Wilson. Really? No. Buster Wilson. He's another one of those folks that has a job over at the American Family Association. And he's all kinds of head up about his goons. course, the American Family Association, that's a, yeah, they're a Christian outfit. Yeah, they're worried about saving souls and who gets to get married and, right. Buster Wilson gets to get behind a microphone at the American Family Association. And he is now telling his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful, what if the Attorney General, and listen, the reason I say this might happen is because if you remember the first report put out by the Director of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, when the President became President of the United States, she put out a paper talking about the people who are the categories of people who might be homegrown terrorists. In that list, she put people who believe in the second coming of Jesus, people who believe in pro-life issues, people who don't believe in having illegal aliens here. They put a lot of good, decent categories of people in that paper. Isn't it fun when Christians lie? Because the one thing he's not telling his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful is that that paper was released in the Obama administration, but it had been ordered and the results were gathered in and analyzed and the report generated during the, everybody, George W. Bush administration. Well, here's what number four says. The Attorney General can put who he wants on the list of people who are too dangerous to get guns. What if he decides radio talk show hosts who don't believe in gay marriage, they're dangerous, so they shouldn't get guns? What about pastors who preach against abortion and homosexuality? They're too dangerous to get guns. That could happen. Their paranoia would be funny if it was not so dangerous and if they were not so highly armed in the first place. Watch out. They walk among you, and you never know who's armed to the teeth and had a bad day and ready to kill in the name of freedom or in the name of the fetuses or in the name of God or in the name of traditional marriage. Right? Yeah. Thanks, everybody. It's been a nice evening, good conversation. And I appreciate your forbearance with me being a little on the, I guess, just behind the beat a little bit. Thanks to everybody who supports the program. We are at present $40 away from meeting Robert's Down Under Challenge for this evening. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Snail mail address is too. Thank you for your ideas, your conversation, your participation in the chat room. Thanks for everything. Thanks to the all-volunteer staff that makes all of this go and has for so very long. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room are moderators. Sparky is also the moderator of the Midnight Horn Malloy Skype group on Friday evenings. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks very much to John Fox for all he's done lately. The website looks nice and spiffy and new, and the AIC website looks great thanks to John's work. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. When you join hands with Coal River Mountain Watch, you become a part of the dynamic struggle for basic human rights among the oppressed of Appalachia, and it is appreciated more than you may know. CRMW.net and AICACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!